On this week's Devils in the Details, faced with the misery of a number of poor results, and really nothing to play for the remainder of this season, except for potentially the futures of the players and coaches currently at the club, we find ourselves wondering what to even explore going into this episode. Nonetheless, we try to take a look and bring to you some insights, as well as maybe some consolation, about the ongoings at Manchester United. Case. For the first time ever, we're recording an episode with no real plan here. We've asked for Q&A, but as great as our audience is, it feels like there isn't even that much to ask. So, how are you feeling right now with respect to the state of things at United, and what can our listeners expect from us this episode?
Two very different questions that I will answer very differently. How am I feeling? This has got to be rock bottom, right? Like, we can't go any lower than today, one would think, unless we get, like, pummeled by Arsenal at home.
For context, we're recording after the Crystal Palace match. United have just lost 4-0. I think this will probably go up on Wednesday morning, so just thought that context was important. In the context of even this season, this does feel like rock bottom or close.
Yeah. Beyond that, what can you expect from us in this episode? I haven't the faintest idea, Aaron. We're just going to talk. Okay, we got a question from George. Are we worse off at this point in comparison to 2022, football-wise, tactically, physically, mentally, excluding Ineos' presence, which obviously is giving us some hope for the future? I've sort of paraphrased George there, but...
I would say no. I think... Actually, it depends on worse in what sense. I think snapshot in time, yes, we are worse. The football is worse. The tactics are worse. The players being put on the pitch in recent matches are worse in many ways, I think, even though the teams in 2022 were really poor. However, I think big picture, I would still say we're not worse. And that is mostly because I think there are still... somewhere between, 6 to 10 very high-value players in this squad whose peak years are still ahead of them. And that means that I do think there's some hope that with better supports around them, those players could make up much of a future good Manchester United team. Whereas I think in 2022, bar two or three players... pretty much everyone playing minutes was a get rid or coming to the end of their careers. Do you agree with that?
I think so. Well, maybe not. I think if you exclude Ineos, I think there is an argument to be made that we are in a worse spot than we were then. My only caveat would be how much young talent we have. I think we have... better younger talent than we did 2 years ago that I think has been less damaged by long-term mismanagement of their fitness, of their, you know, on-ball tendencies, their off-ball tendencies, etc. So I think even if you exclude Ineos' presence, I think I would say we're in a better spot now than we were then. I feel pretty good about that. I think we're in a better spot than we were 2 years ago. But it's still a really bad spot, and if it weren't for Ineos' presence, I wouldn't feel in any way optimistic, I guess.
I think I arrived, even before Solskjaer was appointed, at the conclusion that United would never win another Premier League title under the board structure that existed throughout Moyes, Van Gaal, Solskjaer, Mourinho, and early Ten Hag's tenures. Yeah. There have been some changes over the years, but...
I don't know that I was 100% confident in that going back that far, but I definitely think it was obvious how serious the structural issues were and that it was possible that what you just said was true, which now I think it's almost inarguably true.
Yeah, I mean, I think by the end of Mourinho, I was at the point of like seeing what happened that summer made it clear to me that 2 years deep into Mourinho's tenure, there was just absolutely no clarity between Mourinho as a coach and the board on what the team actually wanted to be. And the fact that there wasn't even an agreement on a vision, let alone an attempt to execute that vision, made me very confident that looking at some of the other teams in the league, it would be a tremendously long time before we were able to compete with them. So I think if you take Ineos out of the equation, I wouldn't see how any of that has changed. I think I've posited at points this season that the uncertainty around the ownership has arguably made this season worse because there hasn't been a clear decision-making force within the club. But I do think that overall, no, it's not even that I think Ineos makes... I think it's certain that Ineos changes the way this club is run to make it significantly better or competitive. It's just the fact that they are not the existing ownership, whom we have so much evidence are not going to fix things, means that there is therefore a higher chance that they are going to fix things.
I think, like, yes, I agree with that. I also think there is one other aspect, which is the people who they have appointed have overwhelmingly very good track records. And it's not just one person who they're saying, you know, cult of personality, this person's just going to drag us up the same way you might think with, like, you know, Mourinho maybe. It's been three or four appointments in key positions that I think make a lot of sense and I find encouraging. So I guess really that's the source for optimism off the pitch. But I'm not going to sit here and tell you that this is the solution. We'll see. I'll see it when I believe it.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, believe it when you see it. But I think...
Did I say I'll see it when I believe it? I'll believe it when I see it.
I think that pretty much sums it up. I feel like there is a chance that we will actually be fine this time. But I don't think that I would put my voice on a public-facing podcast and say, yeah, we're going to be absolutely fine in 2 years' time, because I've just seen too much not that to be confident in feeling that way. But I do think that that is a better thing than 2022, where Solskjaer left, Rangnick came in, Rangnick was unable to make an impact, and United were hiring another coach. And while I did have some faith that Ten Hag himself would be a good appointment, I didn't really have faith that the front office around him would be able to turn United into a seriously competitive side in this era. And now I'm not saying that I have that belief, but I don't think it's impossible anymore. Or I don't think it's virtually impossible anymore. So in that sense, it is better.
Yeah, and that last point is key. There's hope in the unknown, I suppose. that's where we stand. Let's go to a few other questions. Most of these we've answered before, and I don't want to give repetitive content to whatever extent that's possible. Michael Poulos asks, how much worse would we be if we just played our under 18s? I'm going to take this question seriously. A lot worse. Way worse. Like, I think, consider Mainoo, right? Like, consider somebody who's actually under 18 and good enough to be playing at Premier League level. And consider how underdeveloped he is physically compared to his competition. Now, imagine if the whole team was like that and, like, not nearly at his technical level. It would be way worse. It would be way worse.
I think 18 is definitely a stretch here. But I do understand the premise of, like, the season's dead. 18. Why are we watching 8 players who are just never going to...
What do you mean 18 is a stretch?
As in, I think under 18 is too young. Like, I think maybe under 23s, there are a few players who could probably step in and do a better job than, like, Evans, Casemiro, Eriksen, Antony.
It is possible. I think Wan-Bissaka. I still feel very confidently that if we played our under 23s, we would be a lot worse.
I wouldn't.
Like, these
I,
are like, still senior footballers. Like,
if you look at the team that played this match, if you kept Hoyland, Garnacho, Maynou, and they're not under 23, but Dalo, Onana,
okay.
And Mount.
Now you're just. But you're moving this.
I guess the question asks: should we play the entire under 18 side?
Yes.
And yes, in that case, United would probably be worse.
We'd be way worse. We would be significantly worse.
I would like
hard to imagine,
see,
but I think I feel very confidently in that.
I would like to see a mix of first team players that we think will be involved next season, or we think should be involved next season, and some younger players who might not be good enough, as opposed to seeing first team players who might be involved next season and a bunch of players who very clearly should not be involved next season. Like, some of the players in these recent starting 11s, man. Like, I
mean, ultimately,
I can't.
The guy,
do it.
Is, like, the guy signed... is flailing trying to save his job. So, I have no expectation of anything satisfying here.
I guess. I mean, I guess I can't put myself in that situation, because in my head, playing an Evans, Casemiro, Wan-Bissaka left back, and Eriksen, Maynou, midfield pivot is not a recipe for future employment, but maybe he does see it that way.
I guess that sort of takes us into another question, and this is from me. Any chance he keeps his job? Is there any chance he's managing United on August, when's our first match? I think August 5th, something like that.
It's actually absurd that I'm still saying yes, I think there is a chance, because I think if you exist in a universe where the belief of why this is going wrong is that the circumstances within the club, we talked about this a lot in the last episode, I think. If you believe that the circumstances at the club are the main preventative factor in United being able to execute tactically on the pitch, then you could be led to believe that a better board would allow Ten Hag to execute tactics that, when better, would look more effective on the pitch. And we've explained in length and over the course of 6 months now why we do not believe that is the case with this team. But if they do think that, then I don't know. Like, if you thought that in March, I don't think anything from March to April would have changed my mind in a way differently to what we saw from October to March. So if he still had a chance of keeping his job in March, I think he still has a chance of keeping his job now. Do I think that is one of the most absurd job retention after underperformance scenarios that I've ever seen? Yes, I do. I think this was a team that we both predicted to finish fourth. I think, and it wasn't even just the two of us, I think almost consensus Premier League-wide, like, pundit-wide, media-wide predictions were that United would finish in the top four this season. And if not, they'd finish fifth. And now the team is eighth, and I would say lucky to be eighth.
I will say this. I do think you're underestimating the power of dire football. I don't think anything... Like, you could have this intellectual argument that, oh, he doesn't have the players and all and the structure is messed up, which is preventing him from doing an effective job, et cetera, et cetera. But the football has just been awful. And I think at a certain point, even if you do believe that, the weight of horrid football becomes, like, you know, unbearable.
But we've been saying that since December. So I think, I guess I've reached the point where I'm like, if the football up to this point wasn't bad enough to sack him, I don't think that this match was newfound levels of horrible that
I don't
lead
think,
to his sacking.
I don't think... Well, first of all, I think we are very process-oriented, and I think a lot of decision-makers are not. They're outcome-oriented. And a 4-0 loss to a side that perennially sits in the bottom half of the table is, like, more likely to get you sacked than a 2-2 draw to Liverpool is, just generally speaking. Even if the performances are broadly, you know, similar.
Sure, but okay. Generally, the expectation at United has been top four the last few seasons. We both predicted United to finish fourth. At this point in the season, United are 13 points deep of fourth. They are...
Deep of?
They're 13 points below fourth, with a game in hand on fourth, and they are 6 points below fifth.
Yeah.
With no games in hand, with three to play. They are almost 30 points behind first, will be 31 if... I guess they've played the same amount of games as City, so they are 28 points behind City and 29 points behind Arsenal. They were out of the Champions League, and in fact out of Europe in the group stages. They lost 3-0 to Newcastle in what, the second League Cup match of the season? And I guess you have the FA Cup final, but the teams they beat to reach that stage, other than Liverpool, have been largely not Premier League opposition.
More losses can change people's minds. Like especially if you, you know, let's accept for the sake of argument that this idea that he couldn't possibly have done a better job because of the resources at his disposal. Let's accept that that's, you know, inaccurate, not true. If you hold that belief and the United keep on losing in embarrassing fashion, eventually it will make you question that belief more and more to the point that you no longer believe. This is a stupid argument. I don't even know why we're having it. But I do think that losing more and more can even, you know, loosen the hold of a poorly founded argument. Theoretically. Okay, let's move on to another question. We got a question from 11ify that actually I like. And the question is as follows. I think there is an interesting discussion to be had as to what are realistic expectations for how quickly a new manager could turn things around. This would touch on manager versus player cause and effect, and is also topical after losing to Glasner's Palace. Yeah, I agree. It's an interesting question for a few reasons. Generally speaking, when a big six, and that's in inverted quotes, side, sacks their manager, they're usually underperforming. And when I say that, I mean it usually means they've been unlucky, at least in like a recent spell. It takes a lot to get a manager fired, and it takes a particularly large degree of underperformance to get a top six manager fired. The thing is, in United's case, that's not actually true. They're actually overperforming, and it's still... And when I say overperforming, I mean relative to like underlying shot numbers, etc. So you wouldn't actually expect new manager bounce by that token. If anything, you might you might appoint a new manager, and in the short term, see the results get even worse. But given that I think you can assume if there is a new manager, it will be to start next season... I think you will see a very rapid turnaround in terms of this team won't be absolutely non-competitive in the way it has been all season. I do think it's pretty easy to get this team back to the level of competitiveness they were last year, for example. If your question is how quickly can a new manager get this team competing for a title, I would say not next year, not the year after, optimistically the year after that. But probably you have 3 seasons between now and the next time United are challenging for a title. So that would be not 2024-25, not 25-26, not 26-27, but 27-28.
Okay, I think this goes back to what you consider a rebuild to be. Like, if you want it to be, if your idea of a rebuild is winning trophies at like any cost, that's different to if your idea of a rebuild is to be as good as City, which is different to if your idea of a rebuild is to be better than this season or tactically coherent regardless of results, which is, I think, what we're looking for. We're looking for improvement, something to say there's progress, better personnel year on year playing for the team. Promising performance across competitions, ability to manage multiple competitions. I think United can do that next season better than this season if they do end up in the European places. The goal difference thing is a bit weird because, okay, prior to this Crystal Palace game, United's expected goal difference was -9. Their actual goal difference was -3. So what's happening is actually that United are overperforming by a much larger margin on their expected points. So there's a lot of like, there's a lot of mathematical noise here that I think you could easily, like, United are 15th on FBref in the expected goal difference table. I wouldn't say that they've been better than the 15th best team in the league on the pitch this season, but I do think it's very easy for them to be better than the 15th best team in the league next season. But that doesn't necessarily mean they'll finish higher than 8th, which is where they are now. So if you consider improvement a higher league position, then maybe they won't improve that much next season. But if you consider improvement better performances, I think it's pretty unlikely they're going to be this poor next season. Just by rules of the players that play for this club, I don't think United have anywhere near the 15th best squad in the Premier League. And I don't think that another full season would go being allowed to perform like this. Although I would have said that about this season. I would have said he would have been sacked by now. As for long-term rebuilding, if you want to rebuild a title challenger, if United continue to spend 150, 200 million net a summer and sign better players, I don't think it would take that long to build a squad that's capable of challenging for the title. The issue comes where you factor in mistakes, finding the right coach, finding the star-powered talent that's required to actually power you to that level. And so I think, like Kay said, the answer is I don't think it's particularly difficult to get back to the standard of last season. Solid top four team, things to be happy about, but I think it becomes much harder to then bridge the gap with the absolute top teams in the Premier League and in Europe, which could take as long as it would take to get elite coaches and players at the club's disposal once they have good players at their disposal. That could be as much as 5 minutes with players like Højlund and Garnacho at the club, like in not 5 minutes, but in a couple weeks or in a couple months, Højlund and Garnacho could be sustainable 15 plus goal Premier League players. But it could also take a few years, right? And it could take other players. Maybe Højlund and Garnacho don't pan out the way they look like they might. And so that's where the variability comes in. So long story short, if your idea of a rebuild is for United to be reasonably competitive, I think 2025, 2026 would be my answer. If you're looking for like a likely title challenge, I think Case is probably right, 27, 28. It could be earlier than that, but I don't think it's likely that it's earlier than that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. All right. Let's get away from Q&A, and we're going to play a game here that we've played before on this podcast. Aaron, I'm going to go through the squad. You're going to tell me if they should be here on match day one of the 2024-2025 Premier League season.
I just want to say to our listeners, when someone says we're going to play a game, normally I'm very excited, but I've watched the Leafs lose Game 7 and then Manchester United lose 4-0 to Crystal Palace in the space of 72 hours. So there was just a look of dread on my face the second that Kay said that.
Hold that.
But yeah, we'll play the game. We'll play the game. What's the game?
Okay.
Keep blown self? All right.
Yes, exactly. The game is... No, the game is it's keep sell. It's keep sell. It's keep sell. We'll lump low in with keep, but it's keep sell. And okay. I'll allow you to give short explanations, but at a certain point I will cut you off. Okay, we'll start from the back. Tom Heaton.
Don't care. Sell.
I'll take buy in dear.
Keep, why not?
Hey, you make up your mind. Tom Heaton, is it keep or sell?
I don't care. I really
All right, it's I don't care. I'll allow an I don't care.
I'm happy for them.
Okay, I'll take buy in dear.
Happy for him.
Happy
don't
for
him.
Andre Onana.
Keep.
Victor Lindelof.
I don't really care, but sell.
Harry Maguire.
Eventually sell.
No, Aaron, the question is this summer. It's no eventually
this
sell.
Summer, this summer, keep both Lindelof and Maguire.
Why?
because Varane's contract's out, and I don't know if what the likelihood of turning around a bunch of center backs is. If you can flip two center backs for Varane and Lindelof, you do that.
Yeah, I think I'd let Lindelof out Varane. The door. I think I'd let Lindelof go, to be honest with you.
I would. I wouldn't have him in the plans.
Yeah.
I just think it might take 2 years to replace all the center backs. So, but I keep Maguire for now. He's the best of the three, in my view.
Okay, Lisandro Martinez.
Keep.
Tyro Malacia.
Keep, but like I don't think United have a choice.
Rafael Varane.
Sell. But it's more like walk.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Diogo Dalot.
Keep.
Luke Shaw.
Keep unless significant offer.
Aaron Wan-Bissaka.
Sell.
Brandon Williams is apparently still listed as on loan by the United website. Is he still a United player?
It's a sell, but it's not his fault that the talent identification was so bad that he got that size contract, in fairness.
I agree. Johnny Evans.
Sell.
Okay. I agree.
Was the plan even to play him? He's played like 20 90s in the Premier League this season.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? Is Fernandez still a United player?
Alvaro Fernandez is still a United player, but Benfica have a bye clause. I think they'll exercise it.
Yeah. Okay.
I wouldn't play him next. I don't know if he's ready to play for United next season. So.
Yeah. Fair. Okay, he's gone. Kambuala.
You know what? Keep. I feel like sell is harsh based on what, based on the two games he's playing.
Keep. Amrabat.
It's walk again.
Okay.
Like, if he was on the books, I wouldn't sell him, but he's not, so I wouldn't buy him.
Yeah. Okay. Mount.
Keep.
Bruno Fernandes.
Keep unless significant offer.
Okay. Christian Eriksen.
Sell.
Ahmad.
Keep, unless significant offer again. I think if someone gives you what you gave Atalanta, you probably just take it.
Yeah.
Actually, I think this one's actually relatively interesting because a lot of people have been clamoring for Ahmad to play more. Ahmad does, like, I think he's a really interesting technician. Like, I think a lot of what he does technically on the pitch is really good. But the reason why he's not starting matches at right wing is because he doesn't have the physicality to impact matches meaningfully from out wide from the start. He's coming on as a sub, and I think there are still signs he's struggling physically from that position. So either you're saying he should start in the number 10 position behind Bruno and Mount, or out wide. And I mean, I guess the argument a lot of people are making is he can't be worse than Antony, which isn't unreasonable. But I don't think that's an argument for why he should be in the side long term.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think it matters that much at the end of the day, because I don't think he's showing the physicality to meaningfully impact matches for United from wide areas.
I agree. Casemiro.
Sell.
Facundo Pellistri.
Sell.
Kobbie Mainoo.
Keep.
Scott McTominay.
Keep.
Okay. Dan Gore.
I'll clarify my keep because I said it like it was a question. I don't think teams will pay what McTominay is worth, because I don't think he's like a clear starting profile for a major Premier League team.
But if they did, I would take it. I think teams will. I don't agree with that.
If teams offer like 30 mil, I think you take that because he doesn't start for United. And he's 28. He's 28 this year. But I'm not convinced. I think United had a chance to get that amount of money for him. But I think the window's closing with his age. And honestly, I do think he also deserves credit for this season. Like, he's put up good goal figures, and I think truly found his actual place in the squad, which is a good thing.
Yeah, I agree with that. Hold on.
Dan Gore, keep, I guess.
Okay. Hannibal.
Medjbri, I would sell, but I don't think he's officially gone yet.
Let's go to our next player, Omari Forson.
Keep.
Okay.
I think, yeah. Like, general rule, if a player's played, like, 3 games for United and they're 19, like, yeah, I'm not going to be like, sell them.
I agree.
Because even if they're not playing well, I think they're probably not at the point where their sale value is peaking anyways. So you might as well see a little bit more of them if you can. So that applies to, like, Forsing, Kumbwala, Gore, and a couple others who I haven't necessarily been impressed with at senior level. Gore hasn't really played, but I wouldn't say that they are... there are players I'd look to sell. Whereas Medjbri, I think, has had a little bit more time at senior level. I don't think he's like destined for a career below the top division, but I don't think he'll be a United level player. So
agreed. Okay, now we get to the fun part. Anthony Martial.
He's walking. Yeah. So it's pretty much confirmed.
Yep. Marcus Rashford.
Keep.
Interesting.
Unless someone comes with like 100 mil, but that would be their problem. And then even then, like I wouldn't take pleasure in seeing Rashford leaving either way. But I think
I agree.
Like from a business standpoint, if you're getting 100 mil for a 27-year-old who I think is not one of the absolute best in the world in this position, I think you take it. I just don't think that's going to happen. So, and I do still think he's very good and can offer a lot next season.
Yeah, I agree with that. Rasmus Højlund.
Keep.
Alejandro Garnacho.
Keep.
Anthony.
Sell.
Now you get to the last one and the, I guess, the most interesting one, depending on your point of view, Jadon Sancho.
Ooh. Let the coach decide, but I lean towards sell.
Okay. And you said keep on Anthony.
I said sell.
Oh, you said sell? Sell. Okay, sorry. Okay.
Yeah, Sancho's an interesting one because I think if... I don't think any of the coaches United have built a plan for him to be his best. And I think last season you did get serviceable output. But I think the problem is no matter how well he plays in these, like, in these... Sancho specific as well as transitional Bundesliga or like different leagues, I don't think his dribbling translates to the Premier League. I don't think he can be an effective dribbler in the Premier League. And I don't think he is an effective defender in the Premier League, which makes it really difficult to position him in anywhere in like a 4-2-3-1 or a 4-3-3 for United because he's not dribbling players and he's not defending. And so, yeah, if that's you, you basically have to be the best player on the team in every other department. And I don't think he is that good. I think he is quite good at many other parts of the game, but I don't think that's him. So, yeah, I guess that makes it a sell.
Yeah.
But I don't think that means that he's like, he'll probably do well if the right team picks him up. And everyone will say United fumbled when I do think there are clear deficiencies in his game for what United are trying to do.
Yeah.
Like, I don't think it's like a Paul Pogba case where he was clearly just a fantastic player who was misused.
Yeah.
I think there are flaws in his game that make him a difficult player to accommodate.
Well, I mean, Pogba got on the pitch for United and did incredible things almost invariably when he was on the field. So I think it's just a different conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. And even players like, I don't know, Juan Mata, Di Maria, like those were all players who I think would have been even better for United than they were if
under different circumstances.
United had different circumstances. Yeah. Well, and while that's probably true of Sancho, I don't think he was like a bona fide top talent the same way that those players were anymore because of what I just explained about his dribbling and physicality in general.
Yeah, that said, I mean Juan Mata wasn't exactly. I think he was quite below average physically for the Premier League, but he had other ways that he could impact games.
He wasn't, but then even like inflation adjusted, I think the fee was less. I think he was a much better player.
Also,
he was also very much a central player. He wasn't like a central prospect, but generally an inside forward or winger. And he had put up elite seasons in the Premier League. four other teams who had comparable environments to United. So I think there was just a lot of reason to believe that. Like, I do think Mata would have put up ridiculous numbers if he had joined United and Moyes or LVG had gone, here's the role that you had at Chelsea, do it again. I do think he would have put up absurd numbers for those few years of his career before I think he changed as a player fundamentally.
Yeah, and I mean, for what it's worth, Mata in his first full season with United had 9 goals, 4 assists in 2,300 minutes, which is just really good.
Probably more than Sancho has total.
It is. No, it certainly is in the Premier League, no doubt. The next season, he had 6 goals, 5 assists. Year after, significantly fewer minutes, 6 goals, 3 assists. And that was really...
Did he clear 30-90s? He probably did once.
He did once, yep. 2015-16.
The second season under LVG. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, that basically what that leaves us with, if you were to follow what Aaron said to a T, which I basically agree with everything you said, it's 17 remaining senior players, only one of whom is a goalkeeper, only one of whom is a right back, only one of whom is a right winger, and that's Omari Forsson, and only one of whom is a center forward. It also leaves you with only 3 right backs, 2 defensive midfielders, one of whom is Dan Gore. So if you were to do all of that, there would be a lot of new players you need to bring in. And I guess that sort of illustrates that there's a lot of work to be done.
You said 16?
Did I say 16? My brain is not working today. I should have said 17.
You might have. But how many who have played more than 10-90s for United this season?
Ooh, good question. Let's see.
And let's count Lissandro and Shaw, even if they haven't cleared that. I think they probably have, but...
I'm not sure Martinez has.
My point being, don't count like Gore, Kambwala.
Do you want Premier Orson, League or all competitions?
All comps.
Okie
no,
dokie.
Yeah, no... Basically just the players who would be considered like automatic first teamers next season. Gotcha. Not like players who still have to earn their place. Like,
yeah, I'm counting them. Okay, so you said to keep the top 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 minute getters, as well as number 11. So that's kind of an interesting thing. Aaron thinks 9 of the 11 players who've gotten the most minutes for Man United in all competitions this year should still be a part of United's future going forward. And I agree with that assessment. That's interesting. I don't know what that says, but it says something.
It says that the players who aren't as good haven't been playing that much.
Maybe, but it also says that injuries haven't affected the ability to select some of the best players.
But when you describe those 1 to 8 and 11, what's the like average amount of 90s? I would be willing to bet it's probably hovering just below 30.
It's over 30.
It's over 30?
Yeah. It's just over 30.
Wow. Okay.
12 is fine. When you consider that like one of these players is Scott McTominay, who I think we could both agree should have a very narrow role, right? I've lost you, Aaron.
Another, I think, an interesting addition to this is something I checked a few weeks ago, and these numbers have probably gone up. This is actually, I checked this early in March, and is now early in May. So most of these numbers are probably higher than this. But as of March 10th, 2024, Liverpool had 22 players that had cleared 1,000 minutes. So that's roughly 1190s this season. City had 17. Arsenal had 16. So I'll posit that I think you need roughly in the region of 18 players who you think are good enough to play, to start 11 or more matches for Manchester United in all competitions. And not only that, many of those players are going to be starting more than 30. I think of the, 12? I'm going to go ahead and say I don't think McTominay should be starting 30. I don't think Maguire should be starting 30. I think pretty much everyone else in there is a player who can play a lot of minutes for a team of United's quality. So that's like when people say injuries have derailed the season, I don't really think that they have to the extent that we're seeing in the standings. I think there's a lot of talent in this team. And if you look at the average players of the 12, I think only Bruno, Maguire, Rashford, and Shaw are born earlier than 1998. And McTominay is 1996.
Yeah,
players who are born 1998 or later who I would say are good enough to be key players for the side. That's most of your starting 11 for a potential challenging team.
Yeah, the other thing I would introduce is part of this season, you know, I do think injuries have played a part, but I also think if you're going to go with your angle, which I also agree with, that they haven't played as much of a part as perhaps this reflects. The thing to keep in mind is I think Garnacho and Højlund and Mainoo are still pretty far from their true peaks, and they may actually be closer to like Europa League players right now, or maybe even a little bit lower than that, than they are Champions League players. The team wasn't better, but you had like young players who fit into certain roles, but the young players weren't actually good yet. They were just good young players, which can like really negatively affect results in a way that I think is hard to perceive when you say like, oh, I like that young player, but like the aggregate effect of that young player on a game might be less than their true potential, if that makes any sense. So that's just a something I think about often, let's say.
For numbers' sake, I posited this earlier on Twitter. I think if United were to go and spend, you know, 150 to 200 million pounds in the next two summer windows, let's take the current 12 and remove, let's say, Bruno and Maguire, because they're the ones who will be in their mid-30s 2 years from now. I wouldn't take for granted that they won't be there, but let's not assume they will be there. You've got 10 players who will still be first-teamers in 2 years. If you're averaging, let's say you're averaging 50 million a player, which I don't even think United should be averaging 50 million a player across their starting 18 to 20 players. You can get in somewhere between 6 and 8 players in the next two summer windows, plus going along with maybe one academy player per season. That's 8 to 10 new players that you can get into this team by the start of the 2025-26 season. I remember a quote that I think of a lot is Rangnick saying, you know, United need 10 new players, and everyone's saying, so is that going to take the next half decade to rebuild? And he went, no, it would take 18 months. You recruit in two big cycles, you identify your talent well, and then you spend the money on the talent that you think is going to get it. And if you get it right, then you've signed 10 good players, you're challenging again. And obviously the tactics are also a big component. Like that's, when you bring in that many players, you likely need another season to get the tactical elements to the same level as some of these other teams, or even to a competitive level with some of these other teams. But it shouldn't, I don't understand this like normalization of this idea that it should take 5 years or 4 years for teams that are spending 150 million net a summer to get good in the Premier League. Like, you're outspending most of your competition. The talent that's there already is above average in the division. And you have access to some of the best coaches in Europe when you show that you have a clear strategy and are spending that money well. So that's not me saying if United are not competitive in 2025 November, like something has gone terribly wrong. But I just don't think it's as impossible as people suggest to build a good Premier League team on paper in a short space of time with that on that budget. Like, I just don't think that's a true assumption. I think people like to, I think it's partially emotional, and it's partially like looking at the table. Like, United are going to finish 8th this season by the looks of it. Therefore, they're not just going to go from 8th to 3rd next season. And also emotional arguments of like, the worse it gets, therefore it'll take an equal amount of time to get better, or like it'll take longer to get better, which isn't completely untrue. But then, like, What really tends to happen is when things click and teams get good, even if it took them a long time to actually have that clicking moment, once it clicks, they get good pretty quickly. We were talking a couple weeks ago, I'm not sure if it was on TIFO or on here, about how, you know, Arsenal took a couple years to get very good. Liverpool were very poor in Klopp's, in the season where Klopp took over partway through from Brendan Rodgers. The second season, they finished fourth and had a lot of promising attributes about their side. Arsenal finished eighth and were deep in the Premier League, like we said, Christmas 2021. And then they finished fifth in the Premier League. So they were a top four. They went from being like a bottom half Premier League team to being a top four Premier League team nearly like overnight, in the space of like a month.
Yeah.
And then they were, and then they've just been a top four Premier League team ever since. This isn't like, that's not to say the improvement is not gradual, but I think it can be noticed.
It can very be realized quickly, on the pitch very quickly. Yeah.
And so I guess that's a way of kind of tying in everything we've talked about. I don't think United are hopeless. I don't think we're doomed, and I don't think the squad is as bad as it seems. I just think that it will require very good decision-making and very intelligent operations to take the team from the point it's at to a very good team. And those are two very different things. I think the reason why I'm not bullish about it is because I want evidence that the decisions are going to be very smart and that the operations are going to be very good. It's not because I don't think it's possible or because I think it's tremendously difficult. I don't think it's easy, but I don't think it's like mission impossible to get United competitive in 18 to 24 months.
I mean, what is, again, this is all, what does competitive mean?
Like I said, I think the difference between fourth and first has a lot of variability. You can't just recruit well. You have to recruit perfectly, I think.
Yeah.
On the budget United are spending. But I think what United have not had in the last 10 years is not just being a top four team, but being consistently a top four team. Like the most consecutive top four finishes United have had in the last 10 years is two. And it was during the lockdown seasons. I think if United were, like, I don't think it's difficult to be like a top four consistent or let's say equivalent to top four from 5 years ago, because now I think there's more than four teams vying for that in the Premier League. And if you're in the Champions League, consistent Champions League knockouts, like, I think that's a bar you can clear even if fortune is not particularly in your favor in the next 18 to 24 months.
I agree with that. I don't think that's hard at all.
So, yeah, I don't know. And if you are that, like, if you're top four in the Premier League and consistent knockouts in the Champions League, you're probably one of the, like, 8 to 10 best teams in Europe. Who's winning the Premier League?
City. I'm still going to say City. Even though I think Arsenal have a very good chance now. Because I think they...
Yeah, I'm going to say City too. Only because I said City at the start of the season. And I feel like there's not enough reason to change that.
It's practically a coin flip right now. And yeah, Arsenal are playing... Yeah, Arsenal...
Where do you get odds?
No, that's just me saying to myself it's practically a coin flip.
Okay.
Wasn't looking at odds. And Arsenal's two remaining matches are against sides who like are legitimately relegation quality in Man United and Everton. So,
not only relegation quality, but they've secured safety.
Exactly. So there's nothing to play for anymore.
They don't even have anything to play for. Unless
United have the FA Cup to look forward to, they're probably not trying to get injured. And City, I think City also have some pretty easy fixtures too, though. City.
Yeah, they have.
They have Tottenham. Tottenham, I mean, that's not a rollover. Fulham is also a harder fixture, in my opinion. And West Ham, yeah, they're pretty
good.
A
lot of Tottenham fans would very much like for it to be a rollover.
Yeah, probably.
I will
true.
Say that. I think there would be some outrage from both sides if Spurs won that game. Spurs are also pretty much out of top four. So their season's also going to be over by then. Because Aston Villa, they have a game in hand on Villa, but Aston Villa is 7 points ahead of them. So they would have to win every game, and Villa would have to get 1 point from six. And Villa have Liverpool, who are also done, and Crystal Palace away, who are also done.
I just realized on the final match day of the season, I will be on vacation with one of my friends who's an Arsenal fan. That's going to be unbearable, no matter what the outcome. That's unfortunate.
Time zone will be far enough ahead, hopefully, that it's bedtime by time.
No, I will be...
So you'd be like, bye!
No, I will be there in person with him. We will be sleeping in the same residence. There will be no escape.
Okay.
Get me to the summer, man. Get me to the summer. Like, I'm not even that excited for the FA Cup final, just because I feel like it's going to be embarrassing.
Yeah, I don't like that. We didn't do an episode after that Coventry game, but that was one of the worst things.
Horrid.
Ever.
Deeply embarrassing.
Like, we were an hour deep, and it was fine.
I know.
I know.
And then...
Anyway.
A shambles. All right.
All right, everyone. What do I say? That we hope that you have something to look forward to during this season. And we hope, again, for more interesting things to talk about on this podcast. I think... One thing I'm learning is that a thing I talk about a lot is how a lot of football content is just not about the game of football, and we strive to make content about the game of football, and I'm learning this season that one weakness of that is that you require things to be happening in the football that are not only worth talking about, but have a level of novelty that warrants a fresh discussion about them. It's a challenging time as content creators, not to mention the various things going on in cases and my life outside football, because this is just what we do for fun. But it is still a privilege to be able to make content for you guys that you listen to and enjoy. And we don't take that for granted. So thank you for listening. And when we do have more interesting things to talk about, we will make this podcast
better,
as worth your while as it can possibly be.
Yeah, this is probably the... I apologize. Like, yeah. I think Aaron and I are... morale is low. Morale is low. And I think that will be reflected in today's product. But we will get better.
I think, I've had, for what it's worth, outside football and hockey, I've had a tremendously good week.
Yeah, I've actually been quite good as well. But in the context so, of the like, football...
I think I could be the happiest man on the planet, but in the context of Devils in the Details, we just don't have a lot to talk about because the tactics are the same every week. We've talked about every single player in the squad at this point multiple times. There's no news coming about players and managers yet. But I do have a feeling that when it starts to happen, it will all happen very quickly. And
we'll have a lot to talk about.
We will fill your ears with more interesting content than what we've been producing this season. And I hope you guys enjoy what we're doing now. At least somewhat. At least more than the football.
Yes. I hope there's something to relieve your despair. Okay, everybody. We're going to get out of here. Talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.
And we'll see you next time. Hope you enjoyed this week's Devils in the Details. You can follow us at DevilsITDPod on Twitter or on a variety of streaming platforms. Our awesome theme music was made by Jacob Connor. You can find at Jacob J. Connor on Twitter. Have a great week, and we'll see you next time.